is fine.
The kids in Chinatown are very much like the kids when we were in Chinatown. The only activities that we had was basketball and ping pong and maybe baseball and football and a little bit of Chinese culture like Chinese New Year and Ten Ten and Moon Festivals and things like that. We don't really go into the mainstream of competition with the Caucasian groups. You know, we don't partake outside of the realm of the Chinatown.
Why was that?
One is that we're a little bit afraid to venture out into that competition market. But in my age group, I think most of us did openly compete because that was another way of breaking away from Chinatown and getting proper recognition, not in as much as for the Chinese, but I guess as individual recognition. And at that time when we were all going to school, we all played in basketball and we played in athletics, and for some reason everybody was trying to outdo everybody. We were trying to make an impression on the outside market, who we are, what we are. You know, we're Chinese and we're just as good, if not better. And most of the time we proved ourselves to be better.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't go around crowing, we just made it a fact that we're not those dumb Chinese as you thought we were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in competition we'd play basketball, and we'd beat them, we'd play tennis, we'd beat them. And it was always, not only in the athletic side, we also tried to beat them in everything we do in the academic side. The girls, I think, I have to admit, the Chinese girls were far superior than the boys in every aspect. They were the artists, they were the mathematicians, they were the scientists. All the girls were good.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, every girl that was my classmate were all superior people. Every one of them, academically.
Mm-hmm.
They were all a good study, and in Chinese school they were also the best. In fact, all the girls were superior. It's amazing. They were head over shoulder better than the Caucasian girls. They were good at everything they did. It was just one of those, it was just like a period of 4 or 5 years that I know all the girls that I knew were all excellent students, all excellent academic people. I mean, they're real superior.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the Caucasian people, when you see them, they didn't do half as good as our girls did.
Mm-hmm.
They did better than the boys. The boys are lousy. They were too busy doing other things.
Uh-huh. Okay. What did you study at SC after the war? After the
Architecture.
War? Architecture. Uh-huh. Okay. Did you graduate with a degree in architecture?
I went at night.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have enough money to go through school, so I took whatever I had from the Korean GI. And my dad passed away when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
So I was on my own. I had some money that my father left me, but I chose the other way of learning, and that was during the Korean War, where I had a certain amount of time. For the time that they drafted you, they give you so much time back in study. So I took the study, and it was enough to carry me for 3 years, so I went at night.
Mm-hmm.
And took my studies at night, and I worked during the daytime. And then I just take my exams, and it's just one of those standard 4 days, 8 hour exams. And
mm-hmm.
If you pass it, you pass it. If you don't, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is. So,
mm-hmm.
And you can go to college. Well, I had a choice. My brother put it this way. It was, you can go to college, and as soon as you finish your 5 years, you're broke, and you're probably in hock because the study is so, you know, extenuating that you have to spend more money, and if you haven't, you're going to have to go to the bank and borrow it.
Uh-huh.
And the other was to go to school with what money you have and work the rest of the time, and it wouldn't hurt you. You know, it's... if you want to be an architect, then those are your two choices. So, again, I guess it was the right approach because my brother was not wrong. It's just proven that he was right the first time, that rather than spend about $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000 to go to school and then go into debt,
mm-hmm.
and then come out, you still don't know whether you're going to pass the exam. So,
mm-hmm.
It took me longer to do it, but I don't think it was any worse. I think a lot of kids in Chinatown can do equally what I've done,
mm-hmm.
and I think that they should be told that they could do it. And there's a lot of Chinese kids in Chinatown now that have a feeling of being a minority and not superior, and academically because they can't speak English, that they can't get along in this world. That ain't true, because when I was young and when our kids, we had a lot of kids that came over from China right after the 1937 Japanese War. They were refugees. You know, they had migrated out of China, just the last ships out. They couldn't speak English. And a lot of those are engineers, and a lot of them are working civil service. And it took them maybe 2 or 3 years longer to get into the mainstream. But it's worth it. And there's a lot of youth power in Chinatown, that and girls besides, that could do this. And they could learn it, and they could do it. It's just that, I don't know, there's a lot of other outside activities in Chinatown that might interrupt what they're thinking. Because a lot of things that are going on in Chinatown now are different than what we had to do in old Chinatown. We didn't have all this outside extracurricular activities that they could do now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also greater opportunities now for them than we had. Because even when I was in the 1930s, the Chinese couldn't get a job in any of the other outside sectors. A lot of people like Walter Lee, he graduated as an engineer, he ended up as a restaurateur.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Manchan is the oldest Chinese restaurant in Chinatown,
mm-hmm.
the first one in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter and Dave are the last two of their families that are still in the restaurant business. From what I understand, the younger kids don't want to be in the mm-hmm. restaurant business.
Right.
They don't care for it. Strange, because you make a lot of money, but then it's not very prestige, it's not very professional and all that kind of thing.
What sectors were just completely closed to Chinese?
At that time?
Yeah.
Well, you couldn't be a doctor without having a lot of money to fight your way through, and also have the academic levels. Engineering, to show you how difficult it was, in the time my brother graduated in 1936, he had letters of credentials from the Dean of Engineering, and it was recommended that you hire this person. So he's very, very, he's graduated top of his class. Not only that, the professors and the dean even called up Atlantic Richfield, Shell, Mobil, a lot of these top companies to hire my brother. He would call up, and his name being Tong, they didn't realize he was Chinese. But the minute he walked in that door, the lady automatically says, "I'm sorry, the position's filled." And my brother didn't even say who he was. Then he said, "Oh, well, I have a meeting with the president of your company and Professor Fox at the Structural Engineering Department. Arrange an interview for me." Oh, well, that's different. So then he walks in, and then when he met who he was, then he says, "Well, I'm sorry, but we were considering a couple others, and and that position, I think, is filled." So for 2 and 3 years, my brother didn't get a job. And his classmates all got a job.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally resorted to getting a job at civil service. And he was in the county. He took the exam, he passed it with the highest grades. Then he went in as a plan checker, and he didn't do any plan checking, because his own peers of engineers wouldn't accept an Oriental in their group. Even though you could pass it, they wouldn't accept you.
Hmm.
So the only time my brother got to work with him was, for some strange reason, it got so busy that everybody had to work overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And he was getting paid exactly what they were getting paid, but he wasn't doing it. He was only taking applications. So after about 6 months, they got sick and tired of having my brother loaf.
Mm-hmm.
I was there doing, and he just sat there. He didn't make a point of it. And finally, after 6 months, they petitioned to the manager that guy is getting paid as much as we are. Why isn't he working? So he told them that, "Well, you people said that you wouldn't accept a Japanese or a Chinese." And there was a Japanese and Chinese there, my brother and this other Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, "Well, are they getting paid as much as we are? He says, "Oh, yeah, he's getting paid as much as you are. But since you won't let them into your society of checkers, they chose just to sit out here and sit for 6 months." So they got mad and they said, "Well, you're going to have to work like we are."
Mm-hmm.
So that's how my brother broke into that circle.
Mm-hmm.
Then he proved himself to be worthy of what they want him to be. And then from that point on, they broke through the barrier. But there were a lot of areas at that time that you were not accepted to be. Well, there was that snide remark, you're pretty smart for a Chinaman, you know, it's a, you know what they're trying to say,
mm-hmm.
but I take that as a compliment, because if you say that to me, that means that I either done better than you, or,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're not that, you know, mm-hmm. you weren't that great.
Right.
But in the Chinese circle, we've always been told not to push. You know, just do the best you can and do better than what they are doing, and let them slowly understand that you're that much better. And my brother and Walter and their group, David Lee and these people, they're in their 60s and 65s, they had to prove to the white people that they were better. They didn't, you know, with credentials, that wasn't the proof. You had to do it a little cheaper. You had to do it, you know, you mm-hmm. do the same work, but you had to be a little cheaper, and you had to give them a little, if other guys only give you an hour of service, you had to give them an hour and 10 minutes of service. In other words, you always had to prove your way through the circle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my brother and their group, I think, paid their dues so that my generation, my group in the 40s and 50s, now are reaping the harvest of that effort. Because I think that's what we've done, is that we've proven that the Chinese are as good, if not better, than what the regular group is. And we can prove that we can work as hard, if not harder. And but then our next generation, though, is not doing as much, because it's easier. The barriers have been broken. That
mm-hmm.
you know, in the old days, you were expected only to be a merchant and a laundryman or a gardener or somebody like that. You weren't accepted as in the professional field. In law, there were very few. There was only one. It was that one that was in Chinatown. There were very few doctors. Dr. Ed Lee, right now, his father was the only dentist that we used to have in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm. He's
the only dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Ed Lee was a doctor, and then his other brother, Dave Lee, I think. Those are the first. That's the first dentist family that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one that was down in 10th Street, and I don't remember any other in this area, but for a long time, a lot of the Chinese who were engineer graduates never got a job in engineering. There were a lot of Chinese that are educated as in business or in engineering, and a lot of them are in restaurant, waiter, cook, and gift shops, because
mm-hmm.
their mom and dad was in it, and they later fell back onto it, because up until about age 30, they couldn't break into any of these barriers. And much of the Chinese in the 30s to 40s, when they couldn't break in for 6 or 7 years, they couldn't break in, period. They just quit. They just went back and retreated back into Chinatown. And that's Grandview Garden.
Mm-hmm.
The two owners there are classmates of my Doc Wong. They're classmates of my brother. And they were also in civil engineering. They couldn't get a job, so they reverted back to into restaurant. Of course, they're rich people now, because mm-hmm. they, you know, it was a good field. They
mm-hmm.
stayed in it. But at that time, they wanted to be engineers. And they were always saying that, gee, your brother has a tenacity of, you know, of doing what he wants to do. And he made his way, and you know, was kind of glad to see somebody out of their class making it, as
mm-hmm.
they say. And they always said, well, I wish maybe I should try and have gone to that area. Well, now, it is not so difficult, because a lot of the ones that have given their due and their time and trying to prove that they're skilled in that field,
mm-hmm.
they have actually opened a lot of doors to Chinese younger generation kids could make a better opportunity. And I think that's the whole thing, that the younger generation in the 30s and 40s was doing, was just opening doors
mm-hmm.
and proving, you know. They had to prove everything. Every time, like in architectural drafting, we had to prove ourselves that we were better draftsmen than the others. And after a while, it got to be where bosses, that they see you coming and they say, you Chinese or Japanese? You want a job? Yeah, and they said, oh, well, why don't you hang your coat? Don't look anymore. We happen to like Chinese and Japanese draftsmen.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tend to stay longer, and we tend to do more work, and we tend to pay attention, we tend to make fewer mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But it's only because of people like my brother and other people before me that had laid the groundwork. They proved themselves to be reliable. The Japanese did the identical thing that we did.
Mm-hmm.
Because Frank and I, being this generation, that we found that the early Japanese and Chinese all had to fight the same battle of proving themselves. It is more difficult in the West Coast than it is in the East Coast. There's a mystique in the East Coast. If you're Japanese, you're supposed to be great with art and design. If you're Chinese, you're also supposed to be great with art and design.
Mm-hmm.
They don't question it. Here, there's so many of us that they question.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are too many of you, mm-hmm. and they question us. And there's a lot of things that most Chinese and Japanese in the professional field are better as secondary backups, you know, like assistant managers and assistant bosses.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find that in the civil service rank, most of the people second in charge or directly in charge of different departments down in the plan checking department in LA City are either Japanese or Chinese.
Really?
And all the Department of Water and Power engineers
uh-huh.
are Japanese and Chinese. In fact, it's an all-Oriental circle.
Uh-huh.
It's reached a point where it's bubbling over even because a lot of Negroes are making a lot of bad noise. And, what is this, an Oriental ghetto?
uh-huh.
I mean, there's 100 of them in those areas.
Uh-huh.
And in much of the architectural field, a lot of the licensed architects that are Japanese or Chinese are backup. They're chief of divisions and backup in divisions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in almost in every major architectural office, you'll find one or two or three Orientals, either Chinese or Japanese, in the field. And I think we have probably the largest, Japanese and Chinese is probably the largest registration in the state board.
Architecture. When do you think the Chinese got involved in architecture in this area?
Eugene Choi is that first generation. 10 years, he's 60 now. 1936, 37, same time my brother was an engineer.
Uh-huh.
Eugene Choi is one of them. Gil Liang, who's, I think he was interviewed.
Right.
Gil Liang is one of the first. He and Eugene Choi and too many. Gil's, I consider, is one of the first. His mother was my Chinese school teacher. She formed the Chinese Methodist Church. She had the charter.
Who was this?
Gilbert Liang, uh-huh. mother.
Oh, right.
She started the first Chinese school, and it was right upstairs over our store.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I had to go to that Chinese school. I couldn't miss it. It was just right there. The Methodist Church was right on the corner. And his mother got the charter for that church. See, most of the time when you go to Chinese school, it's because you also have to go to that church. That's the way of recruiting church members.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like we had a Presbyterian, we had a Methodist, we had a Catholic. And I went to Offrey and a Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Offrey Church, four churches, because as each Chinese school stops,
mm-hmm.
a new Chinese school would start. And it'd be always in that church. One of the contracts is that if you go to that Chinese school, you have to also go to that church.
Uh-huh.
It's a way of capturing them uh-huh. and making you into a Christian, I
Did
guess.
Did your father go to church too?
Nope. No. The first generation Chinese, none of them went to church. They'll go to the temple. They'll go to a Buddhist temple. They would not go to church. None of them would go to a Caucasian church, any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they were taught to be a Christian.
Did they encourage you to go to church, even though they didn't go?
Yes. They figured it didn't do any harm. You know, it was that attitude. It didn't do you any harm because they don't preach war and killing and what. And then also, there were Bibles that were written in Chinese, and you sing in Chinese, you know, Christian songs. So it couldn't do you any worse is the mm-hmm. way their attitude was. And besides, you get to go to Chinese school.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to send your kids to Chinese school, or you go to Chinese church. Mm-hmm. And most of the time we go just to see our friends anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, all your classmates have to go, mm-hmm. so it's like just a reunion every day. And, right. But that's what we used to do.
Mm-hmm.
But even my sister-in-law and I, we talk about how many of our kids go to church. A lot of them don't. And I guess it's all the way the church is made up. You go to church only because your friend would go. Like if I have four friends and they're all going to the Catholic church, I end up probably going to Catholic church.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't go, I'd go wherever they go. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a little club. It's there were no fixed rules.
Mm-hmm.
And then if suddenly we all hear that the Baptist church is the best, then all of us try to go to that Chinese mm-hmm. school because it happens to have more fun.
Mm-hmm.
They have parties on weekends and mm-hmm. things like that. And
do you go to church now?
No. I haven't gone to church. Except when I go see my mother-in-law, or when my wife is Episcopalian,
mm-hmm.
and when my mother-in-law's in town from Hawaii, I go to church
mm-hmm.
when they chance to go to church. No, I don't really go to church at all. I know all the church. I know catechism, I know Methodist, and I know Baptist, mm-hmm. and I can memorize the Bible and everything. But no, I don't really believe in pushing it. Person to church, because the harder you push, the greater the rebellion.
So your children didn't go to church?
No. Uh-huh. But my mother-in-law taught them all about the church and, you know,
uh-huh.
the things that are. Because in Chinese, you also have, and my sister-in-law don't go to church, but she's a Kunying follower. And the Kunying is just about the same thing as the Ten Commandments. You don't harm anybody, you don't kill anybody, you don't kill any living creature. You don't harm a butterfly just to kill it. You don't kill a fly even.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he deserves to live like anybody else. You open the door and let him out.
Mm-hmm.
If he's bothering you, you know, if he's flying around your food, you open the door and gently nudge him out.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really kill the animal.
Mm-hmm.
And that by far is more Christian than Christian. Because
mm-hmm.
Christians don't say anything about that style. And then the rules are even Confucius or Buddhist. Buddhist is the same way. You don't harm. And so the Chinese have many other religions that are, if not superior than the Christian religion. Because you have to see both sides of it, I think. And I think that there are some superior parts in Oriental religion, and the Christian religion is really nothing but something of the offshoot of the Oriental, and there's so many different Oriental styles that they're interesting. They're more interesting than the Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a Christian, you're supposed to be a believer without questioning or doubting. And I have a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I won't accept. That's why I probably can't make it into the Catholic, because in arguing with the Catholic Father, I went to Chinese Cathedral High School for Chinese studies. See, in order to go to Chinese school, it was in Chinatown, Chinese school is at Cathedral High School.
Uh-huh.
And it's run by the Catholic Order.
Uh-huh.
So they try to recruit these young kids into being Catholics.
Uh-huh.
And every Wednesday we had catechism classes. And I'm baptized as a Baptist. And I also went to Methodist. And I didn't get baptized in the Methodist because I just didn't feel as comfortable as I was in the Baptist. A lot of my friends were baptized as Baptists. So when we got into Catholic, there was a lot of questioning of, you have to believe, you have to flat out believe that you went up to heaven bodily and, you know, physically. And I can't believe it because I'm just too scientific.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was too old, too. As mm-hmm. you get older, you get more fixed in your ideas and concepts. So I used to argue and used to go back and forth on the Catholic
mm-hmm.
ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very eye-opening in that some of it is forced down your throat, whether you like it or not. Mm-hmm. You want to be Catholic? You have to believe in it, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't think that was right. I'd rather go the Oriental style, and that is, You take what you believe, and so long as you believe in it, you can't go wrong. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing is, and the commandments, like the Chinese have about 14, 16 commandments that are six better than the Ten Commandments. So I think that the older the civilization, the better their commandments are. And if you just do, you know, if you just do your thing and try to do what you think is right, and you don't steal, rob, or kill, I think that you can't do anything bad. And everything that you do, like my brother said, you know, it takes somebody to take the leadership to do something and try to, you know, you pick up one rock and another engineer picks up another rock. Eventually, we take the whole barrier down. And in essence, I think that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And the next generation of Chinese, my kids, and kids are in their 30s now, they're beginning to make the headway. They're beginning to get into the field of owning businesses and breaking the barrier, the next set of barriers. That's what I think is what we're going to see. Is there's going to be some Chinese now that I think will break into the business circle. And that's owning industries and breaking into the larger corporation areas and become leaders in that field. Because mm-hmm. I know some now that are just getting into that, like Wang, and, you know, Wang Co. companies and some of those, Willie Chan and people like that, that are multimillionaires and they're only in their 30s. And they made it all here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're starting to develop that next generation of very, very sharp Oriental business people
mm-hmm.
in the circle of business and mm-hmm. industry. So I think Chinatown has a lot to offer. The kids that are there, a lot of them have a chance to break loose, providing Chinatown don't become a trap. And that's what happened when we were kids. A lot of them were traps. Because you become too scared to cross the line. You know, your mother...
Out into the white community, you mean?
Out into the white community. A lot of my friends, I had to talk to their mothers and fathers to convince them to let their kids go into being a draftsman or an architect or engineer. And they always said that, well, the reason that I made it was because my father was in the American white man's market already. In other words, he's already ventured out there. So his encouragement to me is not to be afraid of it, but just go ahead, which is true. But my father always said, if you don't try, you're not going to, you won't never know. If you don't try, you'll never know. And if you listen to somebody else that says you're going to be a fail accomplishment in what you're doing, if you listen to them, you really don't know. You got to try. And you got to lose. You got to take some losses. You got to fail. You can't be perfect. Mm-hmm. To be perfect is, in Chinese circles, death.
Mm-hmm.
That's why in painting, you always have to paint everything perfect except one flaw.
Mm.
That's so that you always will try to do something better. Well, that's a philosophy in Chinese that I think is very good.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, if you don't get this down to the people who haven't tried, they really don't ever know whether they can make it. They might be the very genius that we're looking for. Or mm-hmm. the one that breaks into the circle of being the best architect and being the Chinese in this whole western part of the United States. And I think that so long as there's a lot of Chinese architects around, and we're not that great, and we're not the best, there's going to be one young man that's going to do it. And he may come out of Chinatown. I hope he comes out of Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, there's got to be more people willing to go back and tell them that they could do it, you know, could try and do it, and not be afraid to try. This is it's a very hard for somebody who's never worked around the white man's world, as they say, and intermingle with them. There's nobody inviting them out to co-mingle in that circle. And this is something that the Chinese, I think, should do the reverse. And that's to invite the white leaders into Chinatown to meet the young men.
Mm-hmm.
That would be an accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
Because that way, you can show off the best of your young men and have the Chinese community say, these are our brightest kids into the white community, say to them, you're hiring people. We have some exceptional people here, and you should come and see some of them, interview some of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that gives them, the kids, feeling that the community's behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Even they can't speak the language too well, or, you know, they're afraid that they have a Chinese accent or whatever. And it's always, I don't know, I think now it's an acceptable to have a Chinese accent. I think that it's part of the charm. It, you can put it on or take it off, by the way. But I think that people will listen to you. You know, you, if everybody sounds like a, an American, you close the door and turn everybody's back and you listen to them talk, you can't tell one ethnic from another.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hear one Chinese accent, you say, oh, there's a Chinese, you know. It, it's kind of, in a great mass, it, it's maybe better to not have a total no English accent.
Mm-hmm.
You might need it to break into a front door to get some business. After that, you turn on the Chinese and, and charm them the other way. But I think that's something to be proud of. And I don't know how they're pushing it now in Chinatown, but